A combination of savings, low airfare, and an incredible exchange rate enabled me to go to Japan for a couple weeks. Now, I'm not going to go into a bunch of travel stories and what I saw and where I saw it. I've been to Japan before, and I always have a wonderful time and make the most of it. But I did notice, on this most recent trip, an admiration and a self-discovery in the use of extremely small but inhabited spaces. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. In Japan's cities, its mega cities that I've been in, there's a use of vertical space that I don't see in other countries, where each floor of a building might have a completely different character. Instead of the zoning that I recognize domestically, where the first floor is commercial and other floors are either residential or office space, there will be a building that's very vertical that starts out with a store on the first floor, a bar on the second, a cafe on the third, a pottery store on the fourth, and so on. Sometimes two of the same business will live on the same building, a bar on the second and fifth floor, or two cafes on the top floor and the bottom floor. And this unusual arrangement of these businesses comes because there is such work to make each individual space as unique and attention-grabbing as possible. Not working in the paradigm of having multiple stores that sell the same things and it's merely where you're nearest to when you're in the mood for one, these establishments work to have a character and environment that's relatively unique and will attract a customer who wants that environment even more than the products being sold. This means you'll see a goth bar, and then the next bar two floors up will have a librarian aesthetic. Maybe a store is focused on model railroads, with both the products and the theme of a train car within. There are malls and large stores, to be sure. But what fascinated me was when I would go down a small street, one where I couldn't imagine enough foot traffic to justify what I would find, and discover well over 20 or 30 individual establishments with small signs and graphics representing what they sold on the outside of their doors. There was baked into it a craftsmanship for these relatively small spaces to make them both welcoming yet also hidden. In some cases, feeling like you really had to know what you were looking for to find them. And it was in these small spaces I rediscovered my attraction to this aesthetic. Unlike something grandiose, like a Las Vegas casino or an amusement park, where a generalized theme may make itself known in murals and furniture and doorways, the kind of establishments that I'm talking about are focused on a small handful of people, maybe four or six of them, having a focused relationship with the person running the business. Imagine walking into a room, maybe 5 by 7 feet, which is filled from top to bottom with decorations of a library, books and card catalogs and a wooden top with the drinks and other sold items out of sight. So you take off your shoes, walk onto a padded carpet, and the proprietor has a conversation with you, maybe the subjects of favorite books that you like and recommending books you could borrow, while also providing drinks, because they're a bar. To achieve this feeling is the art I'm talking about. I'm fascinated by this use of small space because it leverages how little relative decorations you need to purchase, and instead lets you focus on putting just the right props, just the right backgrounds, to ensconce you into a different point of view. Using LED lights with different colors set on them, you end up walking into a portal, a place that is separate from where you were before. The illusion can be utterly complete. A space without windows and filled with artificial light has a potential to sound like it's unenjoyable, stifling, but it's not. That's the artistry I'm talking about. In my Japan travels, I would seek out these places, stumble into them, apologize for not having a drink or just glancing inside to understand how they approached their environment, and then moving on, taking pictures of the signs so that I could later find their web presence and see how they thought their interiors should look. In many ways, it's the exquisite feel of a hand-carved box, with details appearing on every side, and the whole work putting forward a feeling as you spun it around in your hands. I don't know where this comes from. I enjoy being outside. I don't necessarily want a sort of claustrophobic box around me. So it's something combining the artistry, the focus and the theme, and the completion of all of those components that seems to draw me in. To this end, this is how I designed my office, this place that I work in currently, a small rented space filled with just enough materials to do whatever my major projects are at any given time. It currently has a bunch of VCRs and scanners and computers to do the work I do. But in a nod to the fact that I will stream what I'm doing, there's a large monitor, an old television, behind me, way oversized for the room, which enables me to have moving, interesting items on the screen behind me, VHS tapes and scans, so that in a stream, I am literally surrounded, overlaid on top, and covered behind with my work. I also have a shelf with various computers and components and interesting things to look at, representing different ideas of what matters to me in archiving. This approach is ever-changing. It's a blank palette for me, augmented by LED lights that I keep on and shift the colors according to my artistic preferences, and all of it lit with a professional setting that I gained from my years of doing documentaries. It's weird to think that a combination of pink and purple, combined with a suit and a specific light aimed to make me look good, would represent something as important to me as the process of digitizing everything that I have. If you think it through, if you think about what we do through our daily lives, it's more than just a gray set of lists being slowly checked off. It's really a journey where the aesthetics of the world you have surrounded yourself with continue to have vital, real meaning for your goals. As I've been stepping through the many, many months of going through thousands of VHS tapes, through thousands of CD-ROMs, and everything else that passes through here, the lights, the design, and the use of this tiny office to make it into a world far beyond its own meager dimension is a critical ingredient to bringing me back, to making me feel like what I'm doing has meaning. And as I saw in Japan, a portal to a very wonderful, very encouraging world. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu Mark Pilgrim, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, Martin, Symbionts, Benjamin Guts, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. While I loved my time in Japan, I just don't think it's a good use of your time to hear me talk about being there. I had a wonderful time in a country that I chose to visit. I have been there a number of times, and for me, getting out of a sphere of how the world works to another country and another society's approach is eye-opening. It teaches me a lesson that almost anywhere can teach you, which is that it doesn't have to be this way, for whatever value this way is to you. And seeing people live their lives and work and interact along different priorities, with different approaches to things, well, it's something that I think makes me both enjoy what I have and remember that I don't necessarily have to accept how things are.